For the record, if you'd stand and identify yourself, counsel. And? All right. Kelly Reynolds?
Yes.
Because we have difference here, so I just wanted to make sure that we...
She should identify herself into the mic.
Yes, she should.
Certainly. May it please the Court, Your Honors. Kelly Reynolds for the petitioner Maria Dolores Gomez-Lucero. I believe that the issue in this case is quite simple and quite narrow. Should a petitioner's statements taken after she has asserted her right to speak with an attorney be considered or be suppressed? She asserted her right to speak with an attorney. She was told in no uncertain terms that she had no right to speak with an attorney. Her statement was then taken outside the presence of her attorney, and then it was entered into evidence, or it was entered into evidence against her in her deportation proceeding.
Let me ask you a couple of questions just about the facts so that I can make sure that they are, because it seems to me the facts are pretty important here. Where you're really suggesting, as I understand it, that this statement was induced by coercion.
Yes, Your Honor.
Or duress.
Yes, Your Honor.
Or improper action.
How
many times did she say, I want an attorney?
I believe, according to her testimony, only once, Your Honor.
One time.
Yes.
All right. And
the response was that she didn't have a right to counsel. Was that the response?
That was the response that she was given.
And at that point where that happened, she was where?
She was, I believe, in transit. It's not clear because, of course, the only evidence in the record that the government, she was not aware of actually where she was as she was going through the maze of offices at the border.
She was. One could basically get the idea that she's not at the first inspection. She's gone to secondary inspection.
Absolutely, Your Honor. If you look at page 99 of the I-213, it basically points out that she was transferred from primary to secondary to the port enforcement team, and it probably took place somewhere between secondary and the port enforcement team because, and of course it's only covered in one small paragraph on the I-213, but it was clear that it was before she was transferred. Her statement was taken by Officer Morales.
Was she deprived of food?
Your Honor, I believe she testified that she was given water.
Was she deprived of sleep?
In terms of, was music played to keep her awake? I don't believe so.
Well, she did. The thing is that I'm trying to compare this. I mean, we're really doing a comparison here. We've got some cases that would suggest what coercion is and some who aren't. And we're really going to have to make some comparisons here. And, frankly, the comparisons have got to be pretty similar because otherwise we're stuck with Ninth Circuit precedent, and we have to deal with what that Ninth Circuit precedent is. So I didn't find any place in here that she was deprived of food or she was deprived of sleep. The best I had that she wasn't physically abused.
Of course, sir.
She wasn't given hours of interrogation. In fact, as I understand it, she asked for counsel, and that's about all that happened. And then the next morning she said, here's my statement. They didn't come in and question her time after time after time.
Well, Your Honor, it's my understanding from the record, although the time is not recorded by the government, was that her statement was taken before sunrise because, according to my client, and I am not sure that this is in the record, but she was transferred about 6 a.m. to immigration detention.
So what's the best threat she had?
Your Honor, she was...
I mean, I'm putting... You make your best effort here on threats.
Your Honor...
Because the honest truth is the only thing that I could find is that a... Say what the others say. If you don't say what they say and you perjure yourself, you may be in trouble.
Certainly, Your Honor, but I think that it's extremely significant that she asked for her right. She asked to speak with her attorney, and that right was denied. I can't, in terms of all of the in terms of the violations that took place, that I believe is the most significant and should weigh very heavily. She was told, you absolutely don't have a right to talk to an attorney.
Well, I appreciate that, but I guess the biggest problem that I'm having in this case is this. There is pretty good precedent on the books that suggests that one doesn't get an attorney in secondary inspection.
Certainly, Your Honor, but in terms of she was at the port enforcement team when she – well, there's basically two reasons why she should have been given an attorney. Of course, it's set forth in my in our brief that she was it was being determined whether or not she was going to be deported or whether or not she was going to be charged with a crime. She was clearly in custody. She was kept overnight. So under the regulations under 292.5, I think it's extremely clear that she did have a right to an attorney, and more importantly...
Well, she got, I don't know, I guess we'll argue about that one, because I don't find anything in a secondary inspection that suggests they need an attorney during that. I mean, that is something where an attorney is not offered. I mean, I can understand that one could suggest that she was in custody, and therefore... Under regular criminal law, her statements may have been subject to Miranda. But we don't even have that in this kind of a proceeding because Miranda is not applicable in these proceedings. We don't throw out statements in these proceedings. So what we're really going under, the bottom line of your argument, it seems to me, has to be that there was coercion. And therefore, I'm trying to make the best case you can make for coercion because... I've got case law, I've got cases on the books that say what coercion was in those particular cases, and then I've got cases on the books that say what coercion wasn't.
Certainly.
And I'm trying to harmonize, if you will, not just go over the board and just say, well, because I didn't like this. And I don't know that there is even one case that says, I want an attorney one time, and that's enough.
Well, Your Honor, I'm not sure how many times that the court is asking that she needs to assert her right to speak with an attorney. She clearly was the vulnerable person in terms of not knowing the law here, and if she asserted, she didn't know that she didn't have a right to, may not have had a right to speak with an attorney in secondary inspection, and then did have a right when she was transferred to the Port Enforcement Authority, and that... You know, the statement that she did not have the right to speak with an attorney did not carry through. She was told, you absolutely do not have a right to speak with an attorney, and then she gets taken to another office.
Well, here's my problem. Whether the statement should have been admitted because they were coercively taken, the standard of review is... A reasonable officer would have known that conduct violated the alien's rights. That's the standard.
Certainly.
And if I look at matter of Ramirez-Sanchez, which is a BIA 1980 case, they suggest that a person alleging coercion must make a prima facie case that her statements were obtained through physical abuse, hours of interrogation, denial of food or drink, threats or promises, or inference with any attempt by the petitioner to exercise her rights. In other words, the statements must be cudgeled from the alien by the government authorities. Now, to me, this case doesn't get there.
Well, Your Honor, one of the things that was stated in Ramirez was an interference with the alien in her attempt to exercise her rights. And that has been actually, in matter of Garcia, that was even extended. And the board said that if a regulation is promulgated to set forth rights that are derived from the Constitution, then admission of statements taken in violation of that regulatory right would be fundamentally unfair. And matter of Garcia, the court specifically held that in order to determine whether or not a statement was coerced, a court must look to whether or not there was any interference with the alien in an attempt to exercise her rights. So In terms of, yes, I realize that we do not have an exclusionary rule in immigration court proceedings, and the standard is whether or not the statement was taken through coercion.
And the one difference I see it between this case and Garcia is that he did ask several times for counsel.
Well, absolutely, but the question is how many times when somebody is told, somebody in
the... I understand that. I'm just pointing out that there is that one distinction.
Certainly, Your Honor, and my client didn't stand on top of the table or anything like that and demand her counsel. She took it as true from the officer that she had no right to speak with an attorney. And I think that her... Oh, I'm sorry. My time is up.
Well, thank you very much for your argument. We've appreciated you two times this week.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
May it please the Court, Eric Marsteller for the Attorney General. I'd like to begin by pointing out that we believe that Ms. Gomez had no right to representation when she was told that she, in fact, had no right to representation. We believe she was, the record reflects that she was at secondary inspection at the time. When she asked the question, it was at 10 o'clock at night. At the evening, she was intercepted at the border. And she told an officer she wanted an attorney, and the officer said, you have no right. And we believe that was a correct decision pursuant to the regulations because she was in secondary inspection at the time and was not being subject to a criminal investigation. I also agree with Your Honor that there is no evidence of coercion here. Ms. Gomez was asked before she made her statement whether her statement was free and voluntary, and she said that it was, in fact, free and voluntary. She was detained. She was kept in a room overnight, but there's no evidence that she was mistreated in any way, and the interview was conducted early in the morning.
How many hours was she held before the interrogation took place?
I believe she was initially brought in at the border in the afternoon on October 12th. She had an initial interview that evening at about 10 o'clock, I believe, and then she had the videotaped interview at 6 a.m. the next day.
So that would be how many hours?
So from the time she, probably less, about, I'm guessing 18 hours or so.
18 hours.
But it may have been less.
That's normal. I mean, that to me does not seem like what one would do in these situations. 18 hours.
Well, I think part of that is...
I mean, that to me is part of the coercion that counsel can argue about.
Part of
18
that
hours sitting there waiting for somebody to do something.
Part of that is...
And told she can't have an attorney, maybe even for a good reason.
Well, as mentioned, she didn't have the right to an attorney. So
well, I say maybe even for a good reason.
The 18 hours...
18 hours?
You have to take into account, Your Honor, that... that she was initially detained at 3:30, then she had to go to inspection. This is the busiest border crossing in the world. And so it takes time to get people lined up. And then when it became evening, I think it was reasonable to let her sleep overnight instead of keeping her awake all night waiting for an interview.
Well, what they do is put her on a hard bench in a cold room. She doesn't know what's going to happen. They don't say, well, look, we can't get to you really until tomorrow.
Well, I don't...
From her mentality, she might think she's going to be on that hard bench for how long? She doesn't know.
I don't know if that's supported by the record, Your Honor. I don't think there's evidence that she said she didn't know. I don't think there's evidence that she asked the immigration officials what the schedule was.
Well, there's evidence that they left her alone there.
But they met with her at about 10 o'clock in the evening for some duration. So then they took her back to the room at some point after that and got her again at 6 a.m. So it's not, and there's no evidence that they told her, go sit in this room for three more days before we get to you. There's nothing like that.
Well, no, they just didn't, in uncertainty, put yourself on that bench.
I agree. It would be an uncomfortable situation, Your Honor. But
so we're just trying to decide whether there's enough here that we would think that she was in a situation where she felt coerced to give a statement. I mean, that's the issue.
And that's right, Your Honor. And we believe that the record evidence does not compel the conclusion that that discomfort that would be caused by being in the room overnight is sufficient to amount to coercion. The reason we're asking for coercion is, did this alien feel they were forced to make a statement? So it really is there a source of unreliability, potential unreliability in the statement based on the actions, the alleged coercion? And we believe that in this case, there's no reason based on the circumstances, or the record would not compel based on the circumstances, that she felt coerced to give a false statement. Her statement to the immigration officer was that she knowingly used her child's birth certificate to bring in undocumented aliens. And there's no reason to feel that the government's treatment would have coerced her into lying about that or giving a false statement. And so we believe that's really the ultimate answer here, is that the record does not compel the conclusion that she was coerced under the facts of this case.
This, you may be accurate in this, but we always get the feeling that our government could behave a little better.
I think in many ways, in any large organization, there's always ways that the large organization could behave in a more efficient, effective way. Or
a more humane way?
In some circumstances, Your Honor, yes. I'd also like to point out the matter of Garcia case, which Petitioner's Counsel has mentioned. That case is substantially different from the present case. In that case, the board found that an I-213 should be excluded because it wasn't given voluntarily. And that was the case where the man was detained at an Oregon farm, told, go grab your things because we're about to deport you. He tried to ask for an attorney, and they rubbed the phone number of the attorney off of his arm before he could give it to someone. That case is substantially different for a couple reasons. One, the coercion there, what was greater. Secondly, Mr. Garcia had the right to an attorney because he was not at primary or secondary inspection. He was inside the United States at an Oregon farm.
The language here in the case is that he'd given up all hope of being able to talk with his attorney. She was told she had no right to an attorney. Can we say that she had given up hope that she could talk to an attorney? I mean, it's pretty close.
Well, the substantial difference, though, is that Garcia had a right to an attorney. And Ms. Gomez did not have a right to an attorney.
At that point. But
that
she
point.
Took it as meaning, I don't have a right to an attorney.
Well, and she wouldn't have a right to an attorney until after she was out of primary or secondary inspection. I understand it's a difficult situation because she's not naturally going to ask for clarification, but the statement made by the deportation officer was completely accurate.
It's all in terms of which room she was in. If she'd gotten over to the last room and had asked and they'd said you don't have a right to an attorney, then she'd be all right and it would be cool.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if even the last room in this case she would have had the right to an attorney. The primary and secondary inspection, as the board in
matter. She certainly had a right to an attorney at the time that they were interrogating her, isn't that right?
I don't think it is, Your Honor. We believe that was still part of the secondary inspection process.
That she never got out of secondary?
That entire time. There was if you look at the I-213, primary and secondary inspection, the purpose is to determine, secondary mostly, is to determine whether someone's admissible. The conclusion of the I-213 by Officer Morales was that Ms. Gomez, based on the facts that she relayed, was not admissible into the United States. So we believe that was still part of the secondary inspection process.
You can keep a person in secondary for 18 hours?
I believe you can, Your Honor. And actually, I think it was a little, I'm doing my math in my head, I think it was a few hours less than that. But yes, you can.
Where's the line between secondary and having determined to arrest?
I'm not entirely certain on the exact point of the line. I can find that out for you, Your Honor, if you'd like.
I just assumed that she was out of secondary here, but
I believe she was. But even if she wasn't, as I noted earlier, when she asked for an attorney, she was certainly still in secondary. And so, therefore, the deportation officer did not give inaccurate information when he said she did not have a right to an attorney at that time. Anyway, unless the court has further questions.
Thank you very much. And I expect counsel used all her time, so this case, Gomez-Lucero v. Mukasey, is submitted. Is Miss C-I-T-H-A-M-T-R-L here? Scythamel or whatever? Mike, you may want to go see if you can find her someplace. She's in this Aguilar-Gonzalez versus Mukasey. All right, we will call then case 0, first of all, I guess I should say, case 0672818, Gomez-Lucero versus Mukasey is hereby submitted. And now we'll call case 0656370, Satie versus J.P. Morgan, Chase & Company.